Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello, welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach. Definitely not coming from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, though. We have taken the show on the road. I'm here with my wife, Wendy.
Hello.
And we are in Scotland. Right as I speak, we are looking out onto the Ochil Hills, which are quite beautiful, actually. They formed an historic barrier between the lowlands and the highlands, and it's still difficult to get over. There's not many roads that go over them. But we're on a beautiful porch, spending that night here, looking out over the glens at Tillicoultry, and it's very beautiful. It's as they say, the Scotch mist is all around us. It's definitely a little foggy and misty, even in the heights of summer here in July. And we've escaped from the 105-degree heat in Fort Worth to about 60 degrees here in Scotland. And yeah, that's pretty nice because it gets a bit oppressive for me, a British person living in Texas. So here we are on the first of our series on the road, and I am on a sabbatical. And that means my wife, Wendy's on a sabbatical, too, because she chose to join me, and which is not a vacation, although at times it seems like a vacation. But it's got a more specific purpose than that. And so a sabbatical is many things. It's time to rest. Well, it comes from the word Sabbath, which is the day of rest in the traditional Jewish way of thinking. So it's a time of rest. Often after 6 or 7 years, you take a little time for sabbatical. And in my case, this is my first one in 29 years of being a minister, though I have taken other breaks before, but never at this length. So we're on the road for 10 weeks and looking to rest and renew, to reimagine, too, because I think that's part of what a sabbatical is, and certainly to restore, to turn apart, come away for a while. And as I'm doing this in my church, Reverend Patricia Bass is leading my congregation or our congregation in a 10-week sabbatical also. So they're going to be going a journey. And I invite us listening in on this show to consider that sabbatical idea too. This is a time to rest and renew, a time to think deeply and to sharpen the saw. I think it was Stephen Covey, his last chapter, his seventh chapter. Again, this is the idea of sabbatical. Seventh chapter was sharpening the saw. We need time to stop and to retool, if you like, because you can't cut the wood unless you sharpen the saw. So in order to be effective, we need to take time apart, and also to visit friends and do other things like that, but certainly not try and fill your time up with doing too much. You know, when I was younger and I traveled, I was bad like that. I was always trying to see everything under the sun, and over the years I've realized it's better just to see what you see and maybe do one thing rather than 10 things. Wendy's been good about that for me because she likes to just rest and relax and renew, though she likes to see things, right?
Well, I like to see things, but I like to be a part of the culture, and I want to go down to the store and shop. I want to walk on the street like everyone else, because to me it starts to make me realize and remember that there are other people in this world, and just how big the world is, and how my neighborhood then becomes a boundary, or becomes a very home feeling, very sweet to be home, but also it's contained. And so I always know when I travel that I can broaden my view and broaden myself and broaden my spirit by being with other people in the other parts of the world.
And it's interesting to do the ordinary things somewhere else, you know, whether, like you say, going to the grocery, you know, you can see the various products that are the same, because we live in a global village and everything's quite homogenized these days. You can get all the products everywhere, all over the place. But also notice the local variants and the way it's done a little differently, and enjoy some of the specialties of the area you're in.
But also, I think that we all shop. We all go to the store every week or however frequently you might go. But to do it with a different light, you can do that at home too. You can look at the product and look at the people that you meet in a different manner. You can park differently than what you're used to. Instead of just rushing through it, it just shows you a difference, and it gives it a deeper appreciation for what's around you when you're more aware.
So really what we're saying, I think, is that or what Wendy's saying is that it's almost finding yourself, you know. You can travel. Whoops, there's a dog in the background. These things are going to happen. You know, rather than trying to see a bunch of stuff, it's a question of finding oneself, I think. And you do that by, you know, going through the seemingly regular routines, but in a different manner, and meeting people you might not otherwise meet. And like you said, Wendy, you can do this anywhere, right? It's not a question of escaping thousands of miles to do this, but it's a practice we can apply wherever we are. We just spent 2 days in London, and before we came up to Scotland and met some friends. And one of the things that struck me was going to Canary Wharf in the Docklands of London. And after the 60s, when the docks closed because, you know, containers came on, and so container ports took over, all the docklands of London became derelict pretty much. And immediately there were plans to reimagine them, you know, and it took years to do that. And there were a number of failures on the road to this new city almost. You got like a new city center at Canary Wharf in the docklands, and huge skyscrapers and a lot of power, a lot of big multinational banks and other corporations have set up their headquarters there. So it's corporate, but it's also livable. There's lots of apartments, millions of square feet of apartments, actually, and condos. And they've maintained the old docks so that there's condos all around the and buildings all around the old docks, which makes it very attractive. But what struck me the most was the sheer power of it. You know, the imagination. We have the imagination to do things, even if there is a reverse. And there were some of those companies went bankrupt and new companies came in. But if you have that will to succeed, anything is possible. You can reimagine. And I think it's the same in our own lives, that, you know, what seemed to be derelict and, you know, has been, can be what will be, what is us to claim now. And I ask you that as we talk about things like that. I ask you, what is yours to reclaim? What is yours to reimagine in your life? Because I'm turning 65 in a few weeks, and that's a sort of a watershed moment. Whether you want to buy into it or not, as you know, the beginning of old age, I don't particularly want to do that. but it's certainly a watershed moment, and we get the opportunity to say, well, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? My wife's got a few more years on me, so she's not going to be, she's not there yet, so she's keeping me young here. What were your feelings about Canary Wharf and all that redevelopment, Wendy?
Well, it's always interesting to be in a city and pick up a vibe of it, whether it's being reimagined, like you said about Canary Wharf, and it's like there's an excitement in the air, and the people that are walking on the streets are engaged with it, and the people that are using it are engaged, and you feel a part of something. We noticed this when we were in Cardiff back in March, or April it was, when we were in Cardiff, Wales, where Paul grew up, and it had started reinventing itself, and there were young people, and there was a vibe about it that was like it was bustling and it was alive. And I think, you know, the people bring that vibe to it, whether it's your own community, but it's the person. So that means us, the person, the people, the community, that's us. And so the vibe that you bring on any given day as you walk down the street and talk to people, ramp it up and make it a joyful encounter that you have as you go about your daily business and meeting up with people, because that's what makes it the whole world connecting together and what makes the whole world vibrant.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a spiritual show, right? It's world spirituality. So we're not just looking at what's on the surface, but going a little deeper into things, noticing that actually once you see the superficial, seemingly superficial, once you drop down into what's really going on, there's a whole nother world. It's not that we want to escape from the ordinary humdrum workaday world, but when we see it in a new light, then it becomes a transformative world. So it's not a question of escaping from it into some beautiful spiritual place. It's seeing the spirit working within it. And sometimes the spirit works even in places where we resist that, where we want to say, no, there can't be anything good coming from this particular thing, event, circumstance, disease, whatever it might be. And yet spirit is still active. I love in, I think it's Acts, where the disciples were gathered together, and they'd locked the doors for fear of the Jews, because at that time they were being persecuted a little bit by the Jews. This was soon after Jesus' death. And at that moment, it says Jesus came and stood among them. And he didn't come through the door, obviously. He was in his transfigured, resurrected body. He was in his spirit form, if you like. But his presence was there with them. And I love that, because it's the idea you don't have to go through the door. You know, the spirit can be present even when the doors are locked. So, again, we can ask ourselves, you know, what doors have I been locking here to keep myself safe? Even then, the spirit could break in and break through and just be present to us and lift us up. Wendy's got something to say about that.
Well, I'm sure, you know, later on in the show, we'll probably talk a little more about reimagining and reframing things in our life. And that's the first step to that is to be aware, of what doors are locked and what constraint you've put on yourself, what veil have you or boundary have you put around yourself. And sometimes that's more difficult. You can say, okay, I know they're there, but what are they? You know, I said just recently about something that I need to work on personally that I said, okay, I know what it is, but what is it? What does Wendy look like without it? And that was a loaded question for me. So, you know, I've been using my spiritual guidance to answer that question, I guess you could say. What door do I have locked? But I know that spirit is right there behind that door and will give me my answer and give me my growth in due time.
I think that some of the work of Byron Katie's good in this regard too. You know, she calls it the work, four basic questions. You know, and it asks you, you know, how do you feel at this moment, or what's going on? And then the second question is, you know, how do you know this is true? You know, totally true about yourself. And then ask yourself, what would you feel like without it? And how would life change from that point of view? So it's a questioning, you know, what's happening? Is it true? How do I know it's totally true? And what would it be like without it? And if we follow those four questions through, it can be startling, because some of the stuff that we're holding on to, we don't need to. You know, it's inference, it's ideas and perceptions about things. One of the things that Wendy and I decided to do as part of our sabbatical was to take two spiritual books with us. And she chose the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, but within the Bryant edition. It's a big, thick book, fascinating, full of commentaries and wonderful interpretations of the sutras, which are quite short, actually, themselves. But they need a lot of explication. And so this book does that. And the book I took was The Words of My Perfect Master, which is a 19th century Tibetan book of wisdom, the collected ideas of this great master of the 19th century put together by his disciple. And again, it's considered to be one of the great basic guidebooks of Tibetan Buddhism. And from the all-encompassing tradition, it doesn't come from one tradition, it's ecumenical. And so those two books are kind of heavy books, literally, physically, and spiritually heavy. But we just thought we'd dip into them and read the passages to each other, and we could journal about it, or discuss it, or think about it, or talk about it on radio shows. So we're going to go to the break in a minute, but when we come back from the break, we'll share what we read from both of those books, and see what sense we can make out of it.
I just wanted to say that the first time I opened the Yoga Sutras and read, and I was fascinated by it. My daughter had it because she was going to a yoga training, teacher training, and I was fascinated. And I thought, geez, that would be a great book. I want to dive into this book. And so the very first time I opened it again on the trip was to the very same page.
There you go. There are no coincidences. Though you could say, oh, well, that page has been opened, so therefore it naturally opened to that one. But we dismissed that idea because we thought, man, that may be true, but still God's little game there to put the same page in front of us so that we could have a look at and have a look what it meant, yeah. So there's so many synchronicities to life, and we'll talk about this later. But we had a chance encounter in a restaurant with a couple who were from Burnley in Lancashire, and we ended up talking with them for over an hour, and it was very enjoyable. And they shared about she was an educator, he was a mechanic, and it was very interesting listening to them and from their perspective. But finding so many commonalities and synchronicities, and they were about, I don't know, in their 40s probably, so a younger generation, but fascinating, and had some very wonderful things to say, as well as we had some good laughs as well. So it's one of the wonderful things about traveling, I think, but it's also one of the wonderful things about being open wherever we are. You know, it's to those chance encounters. Sometimes we keep ourselves too cocooned, and it's good to open up and see, you know, who's there around us that has something to teach us. So how much do we have to teach them, perhaps? And so that's interesting. So this Wendy and I are here in the southern part of, or the lowlands, I should say, of Scotland, looking up at the Ochil Hills, the beginning of the Highlands. It's on a beautiful evening where we are, and the sun is shining into our porch, and the mist is on the top of the mountains. There's cascading streams and woodlands all around us. It's a beautiful place. We're going to take a break. and we'll be Facebook. And we'll be back. Go ahead.
I just wondered if I think Paul posted a picture on Facebook. If you go to Paul John Roach at Facebook.
If you're on Facebook, you'll see a picture of where we're sitting right now. Yeah. So join us in a couple of minutes. We'll talk about what we found at first looking at these two wonderful books from Yoga and Tibetan Spirituality.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives. If you've ever wondered how a specific Bible verse might be interpreted metaphysically, then Interpret This is for you. In Interpret This, Unity Minister Reverend Ed Townley answers your questions about the Bible and how to apply its verses to your life with passion, depth, and spiritual insight. To submit a question or to enjoy any of his numerous metaphysical interpretations, visit unity.org and click on the Interpret This box.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Wendy and we're on the road. We're in Scotland. We'd love to hear from you, so if you'd like to send an email, you can send it to pauljohnroach@yahoo.com or go on my Facebook page, Paul John Roach, and sign in, and you can look at some pictures of our trip, read some of the things we're going to be writing, and comment also. So I'd love to hear from you, and keep us all connected here, no matter how many miles away we are. Before the break, we talked about the two books that we brought with us to do some spiritual study with. You know, the first is the wonderful edition of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali by Edwin Bryant. And the book that I chose was called The Words of My Perfect Master, 19th Century Tibetan Book. And what I love about the Tibetan book is it tells lots of funny stories and teaching stories as well as amusing poems and anecdotes, as well as going in deep with the philosophy and the spirituality. So, all right. So, first thoughts here about the reading. And Wendy, I'll let you start by talking about what came up for you in this page that you keep turning to.
Well, it makes you wonder why I keep on turning to the page, but the page I turn to it's on 160. If anybody happens to have the book out there. And it says that Vasa says there's three forms of knowledge accepted by the yoga: scripture, logic, and sense perception. But they are all limited because they cannot provide information about particulars or specifics. So they go on to explain that if there's a cow in the field, that the cow, if you say there's a cow in the field, it just explains, tells you that there's a cow in the field. It doesn't tell you very much about the cow or who the cow is or anything in particular about the cow. And so it's not what we know. What it's pointing to is what we know is not a, it sometimes as specific as we think we might than what we know. So we're habituated by looking out and seeing there's a cow in the field, but we don't know anything else about it. And we just say, okay, whatever, and we go on. And so knowledge or perception is limited in those facts, that there, we just know that there's a cow in the field. And then there's also generalities that we make and we take for granted and don't have healthy skepticism around them. So we might say, where there's smoke, there is fire. This is another example that they give. Well, that's great, but it doesn't tell you where the fire is. It doesn't tell you about the fire. It doesn't even tell you if the fire is a danger. So there's what they're pointing out in a deeper meaning of things that are available to us if we look. And so it says, only through the clear, unobstructed insight, I'm going to butcher this, samadhi, can one fully grasp a particular of an object, its subtle structure of distinct atoms and essences.
So direct perception then is what we're talking about.
Yes. Right?
Direct experience of something rather than all what the mind does to that direct experience.
It says that the yogi can tell the difference between two identical items since although they appear identical to normal perception, the atoms comprising them are different, and it is these that the yogi can perceive. So it's like bridging the gap in between your knowledge will only get you so far if you don't examine it and keep it alive and keep it healthy and vitalized by looking anew at it constantly, because we're constantly learning and things are constantly changing.
So it's interesting that there's a difference between then discursive knowledge, received knowledge, maybe from the past, maybe from an experience we've had in the past. But and it may be helpful, but it's not really any good if we just lodge our understanding in that and then forget about direct awareness today. We have to test what we think we know by what feels and deeply we know to be right intuitively today. I don't think we're saying we throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know, you can certainly use your logical inferring mind, discursive mind. That's useful in certain degrees, but it's not going to lead you into the heart of things. And the Yoga Sutras potentially, the idea is to enter into the essence of oneself, so that we are free of all attachments. And if we are led by inferences or pleasure or pain or the things that we prefer and the things we detest, then we can't be free, because we're attached in some way. And many of our attachments, of course, come from fear, you know, fear that it's not going to work out, fear because we've been hurt in the past. Maybe it comes from guilt, which is another form of fear in a way, because we feel guilty we're not doing it right for somebody else or for ourselves, fear that we're not going to live up to a certain standard, et cetera, et cetera. All these are external things that we've internalized, right? They are the events that have happened that we've taken in and made part of our belief system. And so in my reading, let me do that, and then we'll bring the two together, because I think they kind of fit together. It's interesting how they support each other. In my reading, it says, when Milarepa was living in the Garuda Fortress cave, in the Chong Valley, the king of obstacle makers, Vinayaka, produced a supernatural illusion. In his cave, Valarepa found five demons with eyes the size of saucers. He prayed to his teacher and to his guardian deity, but the demons did not go away. He meditated on the visualization of his deity and recited wrathful mantras, but still they would not go. Finally, he thought, my teacher, Marpa, showed me that everything in the universe is mind, and that the nature of mind is empty and radiant. To believe in these demons and obstacle makers as something external and to want them to go away has no meaning. Feeling powerful confidence in the view that no spirits and demons to be simply one's own perceptions, he strode back into his cave, terrified and rolling their eyes, the demons disappeared. So it's beautiful, isn't it? When he realizes that he's been given these demons power because they're really just in his mind, the figments of his imagination or his willingness to believe in externals. And when he realizes that these don't really exist in and of themselves, they're self-created, then he can take their energy away and they disappear. The same way, right, Wendy, the perceptions, the inferences, the logic that, you know, support us and help us maneuver through life and not the ultimate place we're going, right?
Right. Well, it's looking afresh again and looking at the, for instance, if we're afraid of something, why are we afraid of it? And is it practical and pertinent for us to be afraid of it today? And if you're just saying, oh, no, I'm not afraid, or I'm not upset over that, then you never have the opportunity to use your inference, to use your spirituality, to use your sense perception to further you along and to look down into the subject, to look down into the atoms as Patanjali says, look down into the atoms of a subject and see what the makeup is and see if it's pertinent or if it needs to be discarded or reframed. So that we can use it as a strength versus a weakness.
Right. Very good. And what I'm hearing then is that, the thing itself is not the problem. The fear is not the problem. The inference is not the problem. The logic is not the problem. It's when we put that first beyond spirit or essence, instead of seeing the essence to be in and of itself, the essential thing, hence the name essence. When we see that, then, as Jesus said, seek first the kingdom and the rightness of the kingdom, right? The balance, the order, the harmony of the kingdom, then all these things will be given to you as well. So then you can use all the gifts of discursive mind effectively because you're seeing them filled with the light of spirit. But when we put them first without light of spirit, then they can confuse us. They can lead us astray. They can enter into dead ends. In my passage, it says, this is also what the ogress of the rock meant. And folks, we all have the ogress of the rock, don't we? That's that boogie monster that comes to us sometimes at night, sitting on the rock of all power and seems to frighten us out of our wits, telling us strange things, trying to frighten us again. It's what the ogress of the rock meant when she sang to Milarepa. She said, this demon of your own tendencies arises from your mind. If you don't recognize the nature of your mind, I'm not going to leave just because you tell me to go. If you don't realize that your mind is void, there are many more demons beside myself. If you recognize the nature of your own mind, adverse circumstances will serve only to sustain you. And even I, ogress of the rock, will be at your bidding. Fantastic, isn't it? It's the shift there between, just because you say affirmations, you say, I don't want this in my life anymore, it doesn't really matter. It's you've got to recognize who are you? What are you made of? Are you a physical being or a spiritual being? Because when you recognize the nature of your mind, this spacious, empty, all possibility, then, there's everything works for you then. Even the most adverse circumstances do your bidding. Even the ogress of the rock, the, the most, the thing that frightens you the most becomes the doorway to new understanding. Isn't this what Jesus, I guess, was saying on the cross through his demonstration? You know, even these horrific things, you know, ultimately lead to my resurrection. So it's okay, and I can forgive from that consciousness too. I can expand beyond all the pain and difficulty of this world. So in a very metaphysical sense, the demonstration of Jesus on the cross is a demonstration of the canceling out of those fears and that horror, because not through ignoring them, but by going straight through them, but with the eyes of love, bringing that essence, bringing that spirit with us. Powerful stuff. Okay. So powerful, Wendy's without words right now. So invited it. Add a few more.
I'm enjoying the beautiful view. I was just loving it. I was loving the gray mist that with the sun shining through it and the green that's on the ground. I mean, it's just, it's so lovely. And, you know, sometimes coming from Texas, if it's a gray day, everybody sort of whines. Of course, cloud cover when it's 105 degrees, nobody's whining. But if it's a gray day and everybody's whining and Paul's running around going, oh, the silver mist, it's beautiful. It reminds me of home. So, I mean, that's definitely a way of reframing something.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What's beautiful to one person is not so beautiful to another.
But you can always see beauty, even in greatness.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So it's all a matter of how we choose to, what we choose to bring to the party, right? Everything can be beautiful. So I put together a short affirmation as a result of our discussion on those two passages. And what I came up with was the direct awareness of essence beyond logic, inference, and perception removes all obstacles. So the direct awareness of essence beyond logic, inference, and perception removes all obstacles. And maybe I could change that to working through logic, inference, and perception. I don't know. But when I put spirit first, right, when the essence of me is paramount, then everything else falls into place. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Also, you know, I'm speaking along those lines. I think a lot of times people, if they want to turn their life over to spirit and they don't want to use their logic anymore or something like, it reminds me of when your grandmother said, okay, if I believe hard enough, the cake is going to bake in the oven, but she never turned the oven on. You have to have all of the spiritual, the logic, and the perception. You have to have those things. But like Paul said, when you put all your weight, all your emphasis on those things, then you lose the essence that's past them that they point to.
Well, what she's referring to there is, you know, one time my grandmother decided that she was going to practice some faith and literally try and bake a cake or whatever it was without turning on the gas. And so she did it for 40 minutes. She put the pie together or the cake. I can't remember which one it was now. But at the end of the 14 minutes, of course, nothing had happened. She said, I knew it wouldn't work. And, well, you know, if you know it's not going to work, it's not going to work, right? So even with the power on, it might not have worked. I don't know. But we, in other words, we set ourselves the task. We say, I'm going to do this. But niggling behind is the idea of, oh, I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's going to be the truth for me. And so then we wonder why we don't achieve something. It seems that when I look at and examine people who have achieved, there's no limit to their minds. I'm fascinated by entrepreneurs and inventors and modern day folks who have taken up the challenge. And, you know, in our world, of course, computers and cyberspace and the web and all these areas are huge. It's where we pay the most money towards. It's where the richest people in the world are in those fields. But all those people in those fields, it seems to me, looking at them, they are filled with possibility thinking. And they're thinking outside the box, as the cliche goes, and into new realms of understanding. And that's where we're invited to go spiritually, you know, to step outside of what we think we know into this realm that seems empty initially, because it's empty because the road has not been traveled. It's open. It's vast. It's available. But within it is all manner of wonderful things. So do we dare to step into that place and not have our minds made up? So that's another interpretation, I think, of what we've been reading today.
Well, I was thinking of this joke I think my dad told me about. Don't panic, Paul. About the lady that wants to win the lottery, and she prays to God and prays to God and prays to God to win the lottery, and when it doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen, and she says, God, I knew he'd let me down. I knew that was going to happen. And there was this booming voice that said, go buy a ticket. So it's like, I really do think that some people, I mean, some people think that, you know, they let the logic go because it is such an abstract. It's difficult to get your head around the nothingness. It's difficult to get the idea that the org on the rock ogress on the rock can be a helper to you. It's difficult to get your head around those things, but that doesn't mean that logic doesn't just fly out the window. You still have to walk the walk and talk the talk. You still have to put one foot in front of the other. You have to take all of that knowledge with you wherever you go, whether it's to the grocery store, to work, or to Scotland.
Yeah, whatever we're doing. You know, the thing about, I don't want to encourage people with lottery tickets, by the way, because, yeah, you have to buy a ticket to win. That's absolutely true. But the odds are still not in your favor. I think it's better to practice the spiritual principles and put those into action in our lives than it is to wait. I know it's a joke. All right, let it go. All right, I'm not gonna try and squeeze meaning out of it. It was a funny joke. All right. As we reach towards the end of the show, good Lord, towards the end of the show, I wanted to talk about hierarchies a little bit because in visiting Edinburgh Castle, and then we also visited the Royal Yacht Britannia, the Queen's yacht that she had from 1953 to 1997. It's now permanently berthed at Leith Harbour in Edinburgh. And both of those places speak strongly of hierarchies. You know, you've got the Queen at the top in her private, luxurious apartments, and you've got all the people working to make sure she's private and in a quiet, lovely apartment. And we walked on deck and saw all the various levels. And yet, in the pictures, all the yachtsmen, as they're called, all the people who are running the boat and keeping it going, all the sailors, seemed very, very happy, even though they were certainly not supposed to interact with the Queen and didn't have the same level of power and authority. And when we went to Edinburgh Castle, there were, again, in prison, the various prisons. If you were a gentleman in prison, you were in quite a nice apartment. If you were just an ordinary person, you were in a lesser apartment. If you were nobody, a peasant or somebody that was considered less than the worthy, you were in a terrible dungeon, but way down below everybody else. And I thought, it can't be much fun way down below. But, you know, the thing that struck me was, you know, with all the power and authority comes great limitation, too, because you have to act a certain way all the time. You have to be a certain way. You are imprisoned by the wealth, if you like, by all the things that you have to do. Whereas when you don't have anything, you're fancy free, you could do whatever you want. And people might say, oh, yeah, but, you know, having lots of money is nice. But, you know, we also know that having lots of money doesn't make you necessarily a happy person. It's the way you reflect on life and the way you approach life, I think, that gives us true happiness. So where are we on that hierarchy? You know, we may feel like, I wish there was more for me in my life, or I wish I didn't have to struggle so much. But we can ask ourselves, you know, who creates that struggle again? Is it true? Because in times in my life when I've had very little, I've been happy. In times in my life when I've been blessed with many things, I've been happy, but no more happy. And it tells me that it's my focus, it's my awareness that I bring to something, and not the thing itself. You got any thoughts on that, Wendy? Because that struck me a lot, especially in the royal yacht, you know, with all the hierarchies, and then on, especially definitely in the castle.
Well, I saw an analogy when you were saying it of where are our thoughts? Are they in the guttural lower chakra? Like, and or are they in a higher way of thinking, and a more wealthy way of thinking, a more positive way of thinking, or are you staying down in the lower dungeons of thought? And I'm a big believer that our thoughts today is what our tomorrow is about, and I'm a big believer in that we have power in those thoughts, and that we can choose them. And to be aware of what you're thinking at any given moment, which takes practice, and it becomes then a meditation that is that you can do anywhere at any given point in time, just by checking in with yourself.
One of the things that amazed me too in the prison at Edinburgh Castle was during the different wars that Britain, I guess, was fighting, some people would come over from France or the US or other countries and be imprisoned there. And many of them had time on their hands, and so they would engage in doing various artistic endeavors. And there were a series of most amazing boxes that were created, and some of these would be sold to people so they could put their jewelry in them and whatnot. And a number of them were made out of straw, and you would never think that they looked like beautiful wooden boxes. There was one that looked like ivory, and it was again made out of straw and things like that. And another one was made out of twists of paper. And it looked like some amazingly expensive jewelry box that was made out of rare substances, not rolled up pieces of paper. So what that taught me again was, my goodness, if you've got the will to do something, you could turn anything into something beautiful. And even if you don't have much on hand except for straw and little bits of paper, you know, you can create an artifact that's hundreds of years old now on display, you know, to amaze others. So why should we be limited? There was another beautiful model of a ship that they'd made in their spare time, and it was accurate down to the finest detail. And you think their understanding of geometry and math. And, all those various things, not to mention the craftsmanship of it, is quite astounding. Whatever we put our minds to, you know, and I'm not sure I could ever do that personally, but I know I can do things that are equally wonderful in my own area of expertise. So what is yours? You know, what is your area of expertise that you can put into practice this week? Wendy, were you impressed by those pieces as I was?
I was very impressed by them. They were beautiful works of art, and I love wood. And there was wood, you know, the box structure itself, but the design that was made out of the straw actually came out of their pads that they slept on. And they would use just anything at their hand to make these things. And they were truly, they looked like beautifully carved wood, very intricate scenes, geometric patterns, all sorts of things. And they just, they were truly beautiful and lovingly, you got the idea, very lovingly put together. So, you know, like Paul said, wherever you are, your mind doesn't have to be imprisoned You can create from wherever you happen to be.
So I hope you've experienced something of the flavor of where we are right now and something of our thoughts, where we're going with some of these ideas. We have no idea where we're going. That's good. That's part of this. But we're open and receptive, and we have some wisdom books to inspire us, as well as life itself, right, is the ultimate inspiration. As they say, wherever you go, there you are. And when we're present to the there, you know, the moment, then anything's possible. You know, I think I woke up on the wrong side of the bed today, and I have been a little bit off, you know, as we sometimes are. I think it was just a few things that were said earlier today, whatever it was, you know. But then my, you know, my perception, my inference, my history takes over, and I start living from that. But as we were coming up here from Edinburgh for this, to get ready for the show, you know, we said to each other, you know, we're in this together. You know, it's our choice. You know, we can be a little off, or we can just be okay with being a little off. And so, you know, I think that's what we're talking about. It's not that we have to be perfect. It's we give ourselves a break, you know, give ourselves a break, because our humanness is always going to get a little bit off or ticky or whatever it is. But we have the spirit within us to transform everything. So, all right. So next week, we'll be somewhere else in this wild and woolly land of Scotland, Bonnie Scotland. I think it's probably going to be way up on the northwest coast, very, very remote. And I'm hoping we're going to have the ability to Skype in. So we'll see. If not, we'll put up an encore. But we're going to make every effort to Skype in. And as we get into, more into our trip, I hope I'm going to find a few people willing to be interviewed. And we can talk to them about their experiences, and maybe we'll come across a few Scots and they can tell us some of their wisdom too. In the meantime, like I say, tune in every week and listen to us, and also go to my website, pauljohnroach.com, or go to my Facebook at Paul John Roach, and let us know also an email, you know, what your thoughts are. What did you think about the ideas that we put out today? We'd love to hear from you, and maybe quote from you if it makes sense to share on the show. Final thoughts, Wendy, as you end our first show on this sabbatical, this time of renewal. I already feel more relaxed, actually. I was feeling a little bit tense about, you know, working on the first show, because it's different when you're not doing it in your regular place, but I feel a sense of relief now. We actually got the first show under our belt, and it went well, so I'm excited.
Well, it is nice to know that all of our electronics and everything works the way that we're supposed to.
Exactly.
And it sure calmed Paul down once everything was working. But what I like the most, I have to say, is I am falling in love with Silver Mist.
Yeah, there we go. And she's not just talking about my beard either. She fell in love with that a long time ago. There we go. But it is very beautiful here. And even though you may not be here with us, we know we're together in spirit. And so we see your day going on in a wonderful way. And we'll sign off now and say see you next week. And again, thanks for listening to City Online Radio, especially World Spirituality, keeping this show and this station on the air, because I think it's doing a valuable service in our world, providing positivity, but not just positivity that denies the dark, but enfolds and celebrates the dark as well, because that's what we're talking about. The ogress of the rock is part of us and needs to be rehabilitated, right? Not through denial, but from integration. So that's a deeper part of what we're trying to do. All right. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Somewhere, tucked away in the Unity Library archives in Unity Village, Missouri, you can find a secret treasure. They are the scripts from Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore's early days on broadcast radio, the teachings of Unity's founders, almost 100 years old. Now, for the first time in history, you can hear them through the power of the Internet. Join Bob Brock every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, for Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past. Discover the wisdom of Charles Fillmore's talks and of other Unity Radio speakers read on the air again. Call in your comments and questions as Bob and his special guests revisit Unity Radio talks of the past, along with historical background from the early days of the Unity movement. That's Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world.
Our words are one of the instruments with which we build our world. Everything is composed of energy in unique configurations of vibrations. Scientists tell us that sound vibrations affect physical matter. Think for a moment. What happens to your face and your body when you speak with joy, with concern, in anger, with excitement? A woman once described her feelings about the consoling comments of a friend. Your words reached out to me like a lifeline. Realizing how much you cared helped me know I didn't need to feel alone. When we recognize their power, we realize the wisdom of paying closer attention to the words we use and how we use them. Get into the habit of thinking before you speak. You'll never regret it. This Law of Life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
At Metaphysical Romp 2, we demystify metaphysics to help you live life at a deeper level. One of our key principles is the recognition that you always have the power to choose how you respond to any situation. Instead of asking, why did this happen to me? A better practice, which aligns with the metaphysical principles we share, is to ask yourself the question, how can I use this for good? We promise you'll experience a transformation in thinking that will reap huge dividends as you master the art of living metaphysically. For new perspective and spiritual insight, listen to Metaphysical Romp 2 with co-hosts Reverend Paul Hasselbeck, Reverend Bill Holton, and Reverend Cher Holton. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time here on Unity Online Radio.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, Alexa, open positive prayer. You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.